Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
And so it comes to pass that it's almost the end of the year, and almost time for a look back. Just if for no other reason than to stretch those neck muscles. You know, because if you're only looking ahead, I know, we have a new way forward. It's coming up. It's coming. It's not going to be coming until after Christmas now. But that just makes us look forward a little further, don't you see? So, but if you're only looking forward, sometimes your neck muscles can get out of shape, out of top alignment. So you have to look back just a little, not to learn from history. Oh, no, 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 no. I would never be so un-American as to suggest that. Just for laughs, just to make you sound like a car talk guy for a moment. Maybe it didn't make the national edition of the New York Times. I'm looking here. But it did make some subsidiary page of the New York edition on Saturday. Yes, if you want to release the bad news or any kind of concession of culpitude, even if you're not really saying you were culpable, best time to do it is late on a Friday. Even better yet, late on a Friday in mid-December, where you'll at best meet the inside page of the New York Times New York edition and not make the national edition. What am I talking about? The Army Corps of Engineers, ladies and gentlemen, has announced they want to close the Mississippi River Gulf outlet. For those of you who have been following the story, this is the slash across the wetlands to make a shortcut between the Gulf of Mexico and the port of New Orleans. You know, because the river has got all those curves in it. Screw the curves. We want a straight line. So the Corps of Engineers, very good at building straight lines, built a straight line canal, slashing through the wetlands, basically denuding the wetlands and cypress forests and all sorts of stuff, to build this thing called the MRGO, Mississippi River Gulf Outlet. From the moment they proposed building it, people in the area said, no, it's going to destroy the wetlands and provide just a funnel for the storm surge from a hurricane to come straight into the heart of New Orleans. Guess what happened last year? That's right. So on Friday, the Army Corps of Engineers, after a year of people in the area screaming, you have to close this thing now, the Army Corps of Engineers says, you know what? Here's a good idea. We should close this thing, Mississippi River Gulf Outlet. But we can't really do it till Congress tells us to a year from now. And we really don't think it had anything to do with the flooding of New Orleans. And we really don't want you to put this on the front page of any newspaper, except the one in New Orleans where people, you know, people already know this. Aside from that, it's a wonderful concession by the Army Corps of Engineers. And, you know, you may be hearing about it here for the first time, given the attention that New Orleans is getting from the national media and from the political class as well. Hey, let's not forget when Nancy Pelosi gave her review of what the Democrats were first priorities in Congress when they take over. Among them was not taking taking the stuff George Bush said in Jackson Square when New Orleins was underwater and putting some under it, giving it some legs. But ladies and gentlemen, this is a blessed time of year. And so it is that this story may have missed your ken. A new Christian video game has sparked calls for a boycott from groups who say it is training for religious warfare. The game, Left Behind, Eternal Forces, is based on that wildly successful series of novels about the struggles on Earth after the true believers ascend to heaven. Players can command the army of good, the tribulation force, against the Antichrist's global community. The game's makers reject the criticism, saying their detractors, quote, have a clear hatred of biblical Christianity, unquote. An alliance of liberal groups have urged Walmart to stop stocking the game, which was released last month. It's about religious warfare. The way to win is to convert or kill. You have both the Inquisition and the Crusades, says one protester. Anybody who is not a follower of Jesus is the enemy, he claims. He's particularly concerned. His name is Frederick Clarkson of Talk to Action. He's concerned that the game, rated for teenagers due to violence, is being marketed through churches. Pastors and youth leaders recommend the game to their parishioners, he says. Jeffrey S. Fritschner, a co-founder of Left Behind Games, utterly rejects the protests. None of the missions in the game has a convert or die objective, he insists. It's the Antichrist that desires you to convert or die, and you're defending yourself against that on the good side. You will absolutely lose each level and never win the game if you choose physical warfare as a means. The word convert does not even appear in the game, he adds, and neither does the word Christian. The game itself is just a great game. People of other faiths could play it and not know it's Christian, he says. He freely admits the game aims to evangelize, but it's doing it, quote, in a way which is very respectful, not Bible-thumping, unquote. When players successfully complete a level of the game, you get a vignette, he says, that has some kind of biblical truth and a Find Out More button. That leads players to a website where they can discuss issues, say a prayer, and become a believer. He says, people are drawn to things that provide answers. Yes, they are. You know whose fault that is? The damn questions. If it weren't for the damn questions, we wouldn't need the answers. See what I'm saying? Well, that's a question. Ladies and gentlemen, this year, 2006, began, well, let's put it this way. It ends with Michael Jackson, depending on the kindness of a new stranger, Michael Flatley. Do you know about this? I haven't been mentioning this on the air because there's more important stuff. But Michael Jackson is now encamped at the estate of the king of the dance, the lord of the dance, the lady of the dance, the whatever of the dance, Michael Flatley, in Ireland. This is, of course, after he began the year, he, Michael Jackson, living as the guest of a prince in Bahrain, one of the Gulf states. Not our Gulf, their Gulf. It's our Gulf versus their Gulf in the Battle of the Gulfs. Sorry, I got distracted. But he got kicked out of Bahrain, or he left Bahrain, because the prince's dad, I think, intervened to say, you're spending your money on what again now? So at some point, Michael Flatley extended the hand of hospitality to Michael Jackson. And I don't know if it was because of the following song. I like to hope so, because this is the Year in Rebuke on Hello, Welcome to the Show.
I was singing in Bahrain, dancing in Dubai, but the princes had their meeting, and they waved me goodbye. So now I'm flying commercial, a king of his throne, a dog in the manger, in search of the bone. Always helped the children, but where are they now? Now that I need them to help me somehow, I'm looking for a sugar daddy. I'm looking for a sugar plum. Someone doesn't think I'm a baddie. Who can keep me from being a bum bum? Germany, sinking in debt. I was sure I had money. That's the part I don't get. Do I blame the Germans? Do I blame the Jews? It's Tommy Mottola, the source of my blues. Looking for a sugar daddy, someone with at least one gun, someone who enjoys the Beatles, and who wants.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this week's edition of the show, a Year in Rebuke edition. But there's stuff to talk about this week as well. For example, this very Sunday morning on Meet the Press, this was possible Republican presidential candidate Newt Gingrich talking about the Iraq situation, saying we have to admit it's a failure before we can go onward to victory. And he said this.
It's important to understand we all focus on Maliki's government. The Baker-Hamilton Commission reports that out of 1,000 people in the American embassy, 33 speak Arabic, 8 of them fluently.
Okay. That, by the way, is only one channel. Don't adjust your set. That's interesting that he would say that, because I've read the Baker-Hamilton report. And the Baker-Hamilton report says that out of the 1,000 people who work in our embassy, 6 are fluent Arabic speakers. Now, you know, there's not a big difference between 6 and 8, except they are different numbers, ladies and gentlemen, last time I looked. And why would you say a specific number if you didn't know the right one? Why wouldn't you just say less than a dozen? Why would you, if you're wanting to be taken, because he's like now saying, well, no, I'm really not a political guy. I'm an idea guy. If I were to run for president, it would be because I evoke ideas. So if you want to discuss ideas, why not, at least, you know what I'm saying? 6 is not 8. See what I'm saying? That's a question, and it demands an answer. Ladies and gentlemen, news of the new Iraq. Donald Rumsfeld on his way out, getting the great accolade, the whatever, from Dick Cheney, calling him the greatest defense secretary in American history, which just proves how much American history Dick Cheney has read. But Don Rumsfeld on the way out talks to conservative radio host Cal Thomas and says, I don't think I would have called it the war on terror. Speaking of what he would have done differently in Iraq. I don't mean to be critical of those who have. Like, it doesn't include him now. He never called it a war. I don't mean it to be critical of those who have called it a war on terror. Oh, here he goes. Certainly, I have used the phrase frequently. Why do I say that? Because the word war conjures up World War II more than it does the Cold War. It creates a level of expectation of victory and an ending within 30 or 60 minutes of a soap opera. It isn't going to happen that way. Furthermore, it is not a war on terror. Aside from that, Mrs. Lincoln, it's going just fine. Terror, he continues to explain, is a weapon of choice for extremists who are trying to destabilize regimes, and a small group of clerics impose their dark vision on all the people they can control. So war on terror is a problem for me. Others taking a rethink. The Pentagon is turning to a weapon some believe should have been used years ago. Jobs. Members of a small Pentagon task force have gone to the most dangerous areas of Iraq over the past 6 months to bring life to nearly 200 state-owned factories that were abandoned by J. Paul Bremer's Coalition Provisional Authority back in 2003. Their goal? To employ tens of thousands of Iraqis in coming months, part of a plan to reduce soaring unemployment and lessen the violence. This would have been a good idea, what, 3-4 years ago? Hey, guys, jobs. Now people are ticked off. Hey, guys, jobs. Really? But they killed my dad. Defense officials and military commanders say that festering unemployment, 70% in some areas, is leading Iraqi men to take cash from insurgents to place bombs on roads or take shots at U.S. troops. Other Iraqis are joining sectarian attacks because their quality of life has slipped dramatically, officials say. Army Lieutenant General Peter Chiarelli, the top U.S. field commander in Iraq, says tackling unemployment could do far more good than adding U.S. combat troops or more aggressively pursuing the enemy. He says the project to open the factories and stimulate local economies is long overdue and was born of desperation. The coalition originally hoped private investors would buy or lease the state factories, but that didn't happen because security faltered and much of Iraq became inaccessible. Born of desperation, ladies and gentlemen. Always a best place for good ideas. And the timing couldn't be better. And finally, about the new Iraq. Where is Ahmad Chalabi? I haven't heard about him since about a year ago, when he drew that embarrassingly small percentage in the election that's done so much good for the country. Well, where is he now? He's just paid a visit to Syria, igniting speculation, according to the New York Sun, that the former Iraqi exile leader is emerging as a key channel between Damascus and Washington. A weekend meeting last weekend with the Syrian foreign minister, Chalabi announced that Syria and Iraq would open their respective embassies, as they did. An American diplomat says Chalabi was also gauging the interest of the Syrian regime in a limited rapprochement with America. Chalabi says now to reporters that Syria and Iraq are considering joint patrols along the porous border they share. Why don't they patrol our border, too, while they're at it, if they're so good at it? We've got a porous border. His organization had offices in Damascus throughout the 1990s when he was in opposition. He has not visited Syria since before the war. Chalabi, of course, is a Shiite. Syria is Sunni. So I guess he was just showing the flag. Ladies and gentlemen, Ahmad Chalabi coming to our rescue just one more time. One more time once. That is so cool. But this was a year in which some people died before they had to pay the price. Ken Lay, the convicted head of Enron, died before he was sentenced. Well, I don't think it was before he was sentenced, but before he served any time. And Slobodan Milosevic, the dictator of the former dictator of the former Yugoslavia, became a former human this year, dying before the court in The Hague could render a judgment and a sentence on him, which meant his next stop was the neighborhood of another former president. As we heard a tape from Nixon in heaven, the year in rebuke continues.
So, yeah, one of these days, Dane's gonna croak.
Who is?
Dane! John Dane!
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah. Yep, only a matter of time.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And we have to be ready for his application, you see.
Yeah. Seems pretty healthy last time I checked.
Mm-hmm. You keep tabs.
Oh, sure, I'm not gonna leave that to Ehrlichman.
No, of course not.
I mean...
No, he's... Here's the thing. Mm-hmm. He's enjoying this place far too much.
Yeah, well, and I mean, he's lording it over some of us.
Yeah. Well, really?
Well, sure.
No,
I mean, you know, saying things like he didn't need the, quote, old man's help, unquote, to get in here, but...
Mm-hmm. Meaning me or the big old man?
I think meaning you.
Yeah. Well, you see, that's what I mean.
No,
I don't think we just... sit on our hands when Dean waltzes up to the gate acting like mm-hmm. God's gift to God.
I'm just saying that it's a little way off, at least, and what I've got is...
Well, but I mean, you know, you never...
No, I'm just saying this is on the boil right now.
No, so, I know, but Dean...
Believe me, I'm on Dean.
All right. Because you know...
No, I know, yeah. but this is...
Well, great, Alderman. What?
Just came in.
Mm-hmm. Fine.
Milosevic just died, and he wants your help in getting in here.
Yeah. Milosevic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wasn't he on trial?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep, sure was.
Yep.
Just crapped out on it.
Well, you know, I mean...
No other way, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, well, I mean, he didn't have a John Mitchell to take the bullets for him.
That's right. That's right. He didn't.
No, I mean...
No, he was up there on his own. His underlings were still in hiding.
Yeah. You mean like Dean?
Well, no. Dean was at the grand jury. I mean, really in hiding.
Well, don't think Dean didn't want to go witness protection or whatever.
He needs an answer yesterday.
Dean?
Milosevic.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, we could give him a... recommendation, I suppose. I mean, you know, that's what he's looking for here. I mean, it's all he get from us. I mean, we don't have the kind of juice here we had down there.
No.
He understands that.
Yeah.
I mean, there are an awful lot of Florence Nightingales here who have a lot more.
Well, they got more clout, no doubt about it.
I mean, more influence.
Sure. You know, call it clout, call it influence.
I'm calling it influence.
Mm-hmm. I think he's looking for a letter, something in writing. Mm. I don't know what form it...
Well, but I mean, you know, but Milosevic.
Yeah.
I mean, the man was a dictator.
I know. I know. His point is...
I mean, you know, I wasn't following the trial day to day.
No.
He was up on charges of genocide, for God's sake. I mean, I don't need...
Well, I mean, his position is that those were trumped up.
Oh, look, Alderman, please. Don't feed dog plop to the breeders, they say. Haven't heard them say that up here all that much. But
no, I'm just saying that yep. maybe we should...
I mean, I'm something of an expert on trumped up charges. Mm-hmm. So I have nothing but sympathy and so forth. But still...
Now, if word got out...
I mean, we're still on limited modified probation up here.
I know.
I know.
6,000 years. Yeah. I'm just passing...
I mean, how did he get our...
You know, from a former head of state, it's worth...
You know, I mean, how does a Milosevic get our number here? Mm-hmm. I mean, what...
He says you gave him a nice mention in one of your books.
No, I'm just... Which book?
He doesn't remember, but he's positive.
Well, hell, you can't expect me to remember them all.
Yeah.
I mean, bad enough I had to write the damn things. I mean, Kennedy gets some big money ghostwriter for his bunch, of course. But...
Yeah, don't think he wrote that many.
No. But he would have if he hadn't had his little thing.
Oh, sure. Mm. Sure. No doubt about it.
No.
But
I'm just saying... Where does he get our number from? You know, I thought part of our deal up here was that we're unlisted, you know?
Yeah. I mean... I think through the internet.
Hmm. Yeah. Hmm. The what now?
The best way to understand it... Remember all those surveillance and information mining methods that we had?
Yep. Part of the good part of being...
Well, everybody has that now. That's the internet.
Uh-huh. What's the point of that?
Well, it's
so now we've got this Milosevic. Mm-hmm. Now, part of this whole puzzle is, he was a communist when he started out.
Sure.
Be a great source of information on the way the cells operated that part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
That's maybe
of course,
how we do.
Of course, the party's not really a...
You never know.
No, of course you don't know, but I mean...
No, I mean, be great information to use against him, if we got him in, you see.
No, I see that.
I mean, not that many people up here, you know. We've got that kind
of... I get the whole leverage angle, and I'm fine with it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Just don't think, you know, because of the murders and all.
I mean, we can certainly write the letter. That's no...
No, I mean, of course.
Mm-hmm.
We could get one of our people on it.
Sure.
But it would be wrong, see? I mean, let's save it for Hussein.
I mean, we don't have that much influence on...
That's what I'm saying, see? We probably have one shot at getting a dictator in.
Yep. We probably owe it to Hussein.
Well, that's what I'm...
He wrote a nice blurb for your second book.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. So, as to this fella?
Milosevic.
Yep.
Yeah. Why don't you tell him to try Kissinger? That ought to keep him busy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
Just tell him that.
All right. I'll be back.
Yeah.
The Year in Rebuke continues moments from now.
Mom got drunk and Dad got drunk at our Christmas party. We were drinking champagne punch and Ken brought his kids with him, took three from his first wife Lynn, and the two identical twins from his second wife. Christmas from the family. Dan and Rita drove from Harlingen. I can't remember how I'm kin to them. What went wrong? So we waited on all front lawn. He threw the breaker and the lights came on and we sang
Silent Night, Oh Silent Night.
Called the turkey, turned the ball game on. Make 30 Marys cause we all want one.
This is Le Show, and ouch, and thanks to all the people who came out to see the Christmas music show of Judith's and Mine in New York and Philly, and thanks to people who came to the book signings in Philly and Pittsburgh. Speaking of Pittsburgh, glad I remembered. So was there a dirty bomb planted in the square in the center of town in Pittsburgh that they found and neutralized? Because if not, I really would like to know, and I'm sure some Pittsburgh city official is listening right now, why was it that there was jackhammering going on at 2 o'clock in the morning on, what was it, Monday morning? Tuesday morning in Pittsburgh? Right downtown where all the hotels are? Was that a way of saying welcome visitors? Because if so, well, there's a damn question again. People want answers. That's the problem. Ladies and gentlemen, here's the real problem. News from outside the bubble. Ask yourself why you haven't heard this on other newscasts. On newscasts, to be frank. The British government never believed Saddam Hussein posed a threat to British interests and warned the U.S. that toppling him would lead to chaos. That's according to a Foreign Office diplomat closely involved in negotiations in the run-up to the invasion. Well, how would he know? Damning repudiation of the British government's public claims in the run-up to the war is contained in secret evidence to the Butler Committee, which investigated the run-up to the war. It was investigating specifically the abuse of intelligence on Iraq. And the repudiation comes from Karn Ross, a diplomat at Britain's UN mission in New York. Why, he's in this country. We could interview him. By we, I mean one of our fine news media. His evidence, in which he says the government privately assessed that Iraq possessed no significant quantity of weapons of mass destruction, has been published by the House of Commons committee website. He gave evidence to the group last month. Some members of parliament had been reluctant to have it published. Yeah, I wonder why. Ross told Lord Butler he read UK and US human and signals intelligence on Iraq every working day during the 4 years he spent in New York, up to 2002, and spoke at length to UN weapons inspectors. Quote, at no time did the government assess that Iraq's WMD or any other capability posed a threat to the UK, he said. On the contrary, still quoting, it was the commonly held view among the officials dealing with Iraq that any threat had been effectively contained. At the same time, we would frequently argue when the U.S. raised the subject that regime change was inadvisable, primarily on the grounds that Iraq would collapse into chaos, unquote. This wouldn't be news, would it? Ross continued, quote, there was no intelligence evidence of significant holdings of chemical, biological, or nuclear material. Aerial or satellite surveillance was unable to get under the roofs of Iraqi facilities. We therefore had to rely on inherently unreliable human sources. Iraq's ability to launch a WMD or any form of attack was very limited. There were approximately 12 or so unaccounted for Scud missiles. The Air Force was depleted to the point of total ineffectiveness. Its army was a pale shadow of its former might. There was no evidence of any connection with any terrorist organization that might have planned an attack using Iraqi WMD, unquote, Karn Ross. He said, this is from the British newspaper The Guardian. All the British newspapers have been all over this story all week. He said he repeatedly questioned Foreign Office and Ministry of Defense officials about their threat assessments of Iraq. He said, quote, none told me that any new evidence had emerged to change our assessment. What had changed was the government's determination to present available evidence in a different light, unquote. He said colleagues and other UN delegations told him that the United Kingdom sold Security Council 1441, later used by both the U.S. and Britain to help justify the invasion, quote, explicitly on the grounds that it did not represent authorization for war. He also was in charge of sanctions as well as weapons inspections. And he says he repeatedly tried to get U.S. and the United Kingdom to act more vigorously on the breaches of the sanctions which were going on. But they didn't do that because they had other fish to fry, ladies and gentlemen. And also in news from outside the bubble, it was big news. The Republican senator from Oregon comes out against the war, says it's a failure. Newt Gingrich says it's a failure. But a British diplomat in a position to read all the intel says that wasn't true, what we were told back then. And that's news outside the bubble. But here, two former Australian ambassadors to Iraq have joined former high-ranking military officers in urging the Australian government to get Australian troops out of Iraq. Rory Steele and Peter Lloyd said the prime minister and the foreign minister were wrong when they claimed Iraq would descend into mayhem if the coalition forces pulled out. They said Iraq was in chaos already and have urged the government to use any influence it has to persuade the United States to withdraw. These are two former Australian ambassadors to Iraq. What would they know? Ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. More than ever a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. But this was a big year for Dick Cheney. He went hunting in March, shot his friend Harry. Big news story for a few weeks. And percolated underground.
Next, intimate tales of America's first underground vice president. The action-packed diary of the man who's just a heartbeat away from history.
Dick Cheney. Confidential.
Confidential. Confidential.
There are two kinds of people in the small town masquerading as a capital city known as Washington, D.C. The benighted individuals in the political and media elite who think it's a sign of success when you get your name in the paper. And those of us in the private ops side of town who know that when that happens, it's a sign of failure. Well, this week, by the preponderance of the evidence, I flopped more repeatedly than a striped bass in a barrel with a face full of birdshot. One thing this little sojourn in the spotlight has taught me was how smart Lynn was to insist that after the initial terrorist threat period ended, we never gave up the secure undisclosed. When I stopped to think about what this week might have been like with everybody from Britt Hume to Michael Moore camped out in our driveway, it makes me want to have one beer and go shooting. And for a guy who likes to call his own shots, no pun intended, but maybe intended more than I know, for a guy who likes to be the button pusher, not the pushy, this was a more humbling experience than having to applaud at somebody else's State of the Union speech. Normally, the only calls I get from the other half of the executive branch are those that are asking me what's up. But last Tuesday, I was invited to Carl Rove's office, and his people made it very clear that the invitation was not transferable. Tuesday morning, 10:17 a.m.
All right, Dick, let's dispense with the pleasantries as having been vocalized, okay?
Fine by me. My Batmobile's double parked.
You enjoy your autonomy, don't you, Richard?
I think it served both my country and myself pretty darn well. Certainly beat the alternative.
I.e. going to funerals and waiting for GW to die? Well, I think the president, if he were to focus on the past for a moment instead of fixing his gaze totally on the future, I think he might have reason to feel as if, like, your autonomy is the elephant he's busy cleaning up after.
Carl, look, I didn't spend my adult life and half of my wife's climbing up to the top of this particular greasy pole just to wind up being ordered around by an operative. Candidermatics, Poindexter.
I didn't know you looked down on operatives, Dick, but all right, no dramatics. Just a clear, unambiguous suggestion by your commander-in-chief that you break the silence on this little shootout of yours and go out and make a contrite, plausible statement about how sorry you are and everything. Except, of course, you know, not everything.
Of course, Carl, appreciate the consideration. Look, pal, maybe you haven't read the Nexus file on me lately, but word has it that I'm not the make-a-contrite-statement kind of guy. That's not why you hired me. That's not why I hired on. If you wanted a camera-ready pretty boy, you should have insisted that I not choose myself in the first place.
What is this, Miss the Obvious Day at the Secure Undisclosed Brain? Mr. Vice President, for your information, the vast majority of this shop's energy this week has been expended on a rather bizarre activity of yours.
I know. And the war's going very well.
I'm not talking about the war. Now, I know as senior coordinator for the Katrina recovery and senior counselor at the White House, it really isn't any of my business whether the president continues to believe that executive privilege protects your activities with and through Mr. Libby and earlier on with the Energy Advisory Council. But, you know, it's not a slam dunk. It may not even be a finger roll.
Just so I can be sure my secretary gets this all down right, should this be filed under threats?
Oh, not a threat. Well, not an imminent threat. Maybe a grave and gathering one. I think you remember those.
Look, nobody's going to buy the Hallmark card Dick Cheney collection. A statement like that would look as phony as a Democrat war hero.
No, you don't do it as a statement. You do it as an interview with a friendly.
What? Am I supposed to pick up the phone and out of the blue call Britt Hume and say, "Hey, Britt, doing anything this afternoon?" Sounds a little broke back and a lot pathetic.
You know, Dick, the president and I seem to have a closer relationship with the Bible than maybe you do, all due respect aside. But the prophet says there is a time to reap and a time to sow.
I'm familiar with the concept.
Well, maybe this is a time for you to be pathetic. Be sure and take some White House water with you for the trip back.
Just my luck, there wasn't a covey of quail flying behind Carl's head just about then. I did the statement, and the folks in the Cheney press criticism blowback account worked hard to work it hard. Then I smoothed out the rough edges by kicking back a frosty light one and shooting holes in my wastebasket. When that got old, I placed a call to my close friend Harry Whittington, just to catch up on development since I peppered him in the face and heart. Wednesday, 6:27 p.m.
Well, it still hurts a little bit when I breathe, but I am working on that, Mr. Vice President. I really am.
Well, that's great, old friend. How's your wife? You know, I'm sorry to say I'm so traumatized I don't remember her name at the moment.
It's Mercedes.
Huh. Like the vehicle.
That's right. So the doctor says the bruises are going to disappear in 6 or 8 months, so I guess there goes my cover story in Texas Monthly.
Yeah, pity.
I was kidding, sir. I'm sorry.
Well, what did you just say, Harry?
I said I was sorry for kidding at a time like this when I'm in the hospital and you're calling to do whatever you're calling to do.
You said you were sorry. Mm-hmm. You gave me an idea. When does the doctor say you can go home?
Oh, he said Friday at the earliest.
So here's what your country needs from you, old pal. On the way out of the hospital, make a little statement of contrition for the trouble you've caused me by letting me shoot you. Give it all the plausibility inherent in your role as a Texas lawyer and political leader, and most important of all, don't take any questions. The time it takes you to do that, they'll have brought a government limo around for you. Enjoy it for the rest of the day.
I don't know if I'll be able to do that, sir. I do look pretty bruised up facially, and like I said, it still hurts to breathe a little.
Well, we'll get the doc to shoot you up real good. Don't worry about the pain, my friend. Uh-huh. As for your face, my people here say Max Factor Egyptian number 9 should do the job just fine.
Well, but, sir, in all due respect, and golly, I am sorry that the incident ruined our first ever time together.
Oh, me too, old buddy.
But just to continue my train here, who's going to believe me apologizing to you? I mean, of course I don't remember the incident all that clearly, but doggone it.
Harry, we're happy to let you do whatever it is you do in your field. Let the experts in believability worry about that. Look, my friend, you agree with me that the country has far more important things to focus on.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, when you make your statement, the story ends. The press corps goes back to sleep. The nation moves on. That's a contribution. Sometimes when people make important contributions, they get other important contributions back. It's a nutty world, these things happen.
Mr. Vice President, I suppose I'm not really in a position to bargain with you.
Not really, but what's on your mind?
Well, if they could make sure the injection is Demerol, that would sure make it easier for me to face that little ordeal.
Harry, mi amigo, we'll see what we can do.
Carl, squeezing in on my plenary executive power, felt like a new pair of shoes one size too small. But talking to my old friend Harry, that was like putting on some comfortable old slippers and having only one beer. In the partial diary for early February 2006, sincerely yours, Dick Cheney. Confidential. Confidential.
Well, this is the year in rebuke, so I'll take the rebuke for saying that was in March when Dick says it was in February. You know, it's like saying 8 people in the embassy speak Arabic when it's only 6. So I guess I won't be running for president either. But now, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast, the apologies of the week. Won't you?
We're so sorry.
To our readers, this is from Philadelphia's Inquirer. In yesterday's Inquirer, the syndicated comic strip F-Minus had a school counselor asking a student named Shane, whose grades had fallen, if there were issues at home. Many readers expressed concern over the seeming insensitivity of the comic. When presented against the news that a student of the same name had taken his own life the day before at Springfield Township High School. Comic strips are prepared days or even weeks in advance of publication. Inquirer editors review them in advance as well. The timing was coincidental, but unfortunate, and we regret that the comic made it appear that we were insensitive to the tragedy. If you're ever wondering about the difference between the United States and Japan, the following items should be instructive. The Prime Minister of Japan has apologized to the nation and agreed to work for 3 months without pay after admitting that he helped to rig dozens of town meetings to give the impression that voters were overwhelmingly sympathetic to his policies. Yeah, that would happen here, too. Promising to forfeit about $50,000, Shinzo Abe said it was very regrettable that these kinds of goings-on occurred. 4 senior members of his cabinet also agreed to forfeit months of pay. The town meetings were supposed to inject grassroots democracy into the political system. Really? Where did that idea come from? But it emerged that most of the 174 meetings were staged, with officials posing as ordinary citizens to put simple questions to their paymasters. An investigation triggered by media claims that the meetings were rigged found that the citizens were paid $50 to ask questions intended to help forge government policy and education. Well, they said it was forged. Government stooges were instructed to make sure that they did not start off by saying, quote, I was told to say. Rosie O'Donnell says she's sorry for mocking spoken Chinese on The View. But an association that represents journalists from diverse ethnic and racial backgrounds, including Chinese Americans, says that isn't enough. In the December 5th segment, O'Donnell joked about how Danny DeVito's recently and seemingly drunken appearance on the ABC show had become international news. You know, you can imagine in China, it's like, ching chong, ching chong chong, Danny DeVito, ching chong 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 chong, drunk The View, ching chong, the 44-year-old comedian said. It's the Associated Press describing her as a comedian, ladies and gentlemen, not your host. On Thursday's show, she told the audience, to say ching chong to someone is very offensive, and some Asian people have told me it's as bad as the N-word, which I was like, really? I didn't know that. That's how she was like. Karen Lincoln Michelle, president of Unity Journalists of Color, said O'Donnell's remarks really didn't sound like an apology to me. She said Unity was waiting for Barbara Walters, who created the show, to respond to a letter asking her to publicly acknowledge that O'Donnell's remarks were patently offensive. I think by allowing Rosie's cheap jabs at Chinese Americans to go unchecked, then the network is essentially condoning racial and ethnic slurs, Lincoln Michelle told the Associated Press. You know, it was never my intent to mock, O'Donnell said on Thursday's show, and I'm sorry for those people who felt hurt or were teased on the playground, but I'm also going to give you a fair warning that there's a good chance I'll do something like that again, probably in the next week, not on purpose, only because it's how my brain works. Unquote. Hey, Michael Richards. There's the statement you should have used. I'm sorry, but it's how my brain works. O'Donnell characterized her accent as Chinese-Asian, pseudo-Japanese, sounded a little Yiddish, meaning her joke accent, not her real accent, which sounds, to me at least, like imagining there was a lesbian car guy. Tony Snow, White House spokesperson, said this week, to David Gregory of NBC News, because you and I had a conversation last week that got a whole lot of play in a lot of places where I used the term partisan in describing one of your questions, and I've thought a lot about that, and I was wrong, so I want to apologize and tell you I'm sorry for it. David Gregory replied, thank you. And Tony Snow continued, the reason I do that is not only because it's the right thing, but also because I want people in this room and people who watch these to understand that the relations in this room are professional and collegial. Tony Snow apologizing. Ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast, the Apologies of the Week. And speaking of Chinese people, President Bush paid a visit to the Chinese president this year, earlier this year. Shortly afterward, he paid a visit to California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. Let's relive that moment, shall we? Because it's the year in rebuke.
So, Mr. President... Welcome to California.
Hey, listen, Governor. As hot as it's getting in Washington, D.C., it's good to be anywhere else, but especially here because it's California.
So, how was your lunch with the Chinese president?
Who?
President who?
That's his name.
Whose?
That's right. Well, sir, you know, it was tense.
Mm-hmm.
It was full of tension.
Mm. Who was tense?
Yes, he was.
Who was?
Who?
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 All right, sir. You know Senator Ackerman?
I do.
Nice to see you, sir.
So, sir, I'm sure you discussed human rights with who?
We had a frank exchange of views with who?
Who came up during the discussion?
Who was having the discussion? He didn't have to come up.
No, sir. Whose names were brought up during the discussion of human rights? It's important to my base as well as to my first coat of political primer.
Oh, sure. Well, we talked to Mr. Hu about the Falun Gong and the Tibetanese.
Mm. And who said what?
No, he said when.
Who did?
Yes, sir.
He said what?
He said when. Wen Ho Lee. That was his answer on the subject of human rights, how we had persecutorated him.
Who?
Not who. When.
You persecuted when?
According to who?
And what did you say?
To who?
To whoever you were talking to.
I was talking to you.
Mr. President, I don't care if you were talking to you know who. What did he say?
When?
I thought he brought up when.
Who did?
That's what you said. Maria, let's use the small hammer for this trip. It photographs better in the lack of darkness.
Lovely woman. So, look, Governor Schwartz. Governor Schwartz and... So, look, Governor Ager. When he started talking about when, I just responded to him about how this is the land of opportunity for racially ethnicated folks like Michelle Wee.
And what did he say?
When?
When you mentioned Wee.
He just brought it back around to when.
Who did?
Who do you think I'm talking about?
That's right.
Who?
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 Who? So he kept bringing up when?
Who did?
That's right. And your response?
I'd say we.
So who left Washington how?
He left with Vice Premier Wu.
Who did?
Who left with Wu?
That's what you said.
That's what you counted with we.
All right, sir. Here's the hammer, please. Get in first. It's been swept.
Thanks.
I must say, I remember when I met Dung.
Who?
No, Dung. It was before your time.
Hey, mine governor. I got news for you. Dung was not before my time.
No? Says who?
Hey, all due respect aside, if we're talking about Dung, we've left who way back when?
Well, I don't care who knows it. I feel bad for when.
That's what we said.
Eu sigo pelo sol pra merecer até anoitecer, rezando pra minha luz não se apagar.
A cidade é brilhante de estrelas,
um cheiro de indecência. Suas sombras me acompanham, mexendo nesse fogo.
Now, news of the warm for just a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, according to New Scientist magazine, 2006 was the Earth's sixth warmest year on record, averaging almost half a degree centigrade above the average from 1960 to 1990. The records extend back to 1861, and this was the warmest year ever in the United Kingdom. On the other hand, a regional nuclear war between third world countries could trigger planet-wide cooling that would likely ravage agriculture and kill millions of people. So if it's getting too warm, just get India and Pakistan ticked at each other, won't you? Thank you very much. And that's gonna, with that piece of good advice on world statecraft, That's going to conclude this week's... Hey, listen, it's better than anything I'm hearing out of Washington. That's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR Worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world to the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz. Available as a free download at www.audible.com/leshow. And available around the world at two different locations, live and archived on your computer, via the internet, whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. And available as a free podcast at KCRW and on the Mighty 104 in Berlin, if you're ever there. And it would be just like no jackhammering in Pittsburgh at 2 in the morning, lasting until 4, don't you know? If you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. Email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the Pittsburgh desk and to the San Diego desk. Le Show playlist available at harryshearer.com. And the book, Not Enough Indians, by the host of this program, is available wherever fine books are sold.
In other words, buy the book.
Thank you, President. Bush? Is it Bush? Yes. You sure? Sure it's Bush? I'll trust you on that. Yes, it does make a fine Christmas gift, sir. Thank you for asking. It's one of the few questions we do have an answer to around here. Next week, kind of our semi-traditional holiday show, almost like the one that you would have come and seen in person this year, had you, but different. So come join us, won't you? The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions that originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. Stop that jackhammering!